All right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about things football in Portugal. You're listening to myself, Albert, and as always, I'm joined by my brother Barney. How are you doing, Barney? How's things?
Yeah, really good, man. Nice to just been listening to the radio, listen to you chatting to Paddy Kenny.
Kenny Miller. Good start.
That is a good start. Paddy, who's Paddy Kenny?
Paddy Kenny is like an Irish goalkeeper, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, that's it. Kenny Miller, that's it.
Kenny Miller.
Yeah, that was really good, man. I mean, the Rangers fans are excited about the Benfica game. We've been doing a few bits and bobs with that.
Yeah, that's two sort of bits of Rangers media that we've done now. Yeah, Barney's alluding to it. I just did live radio for the first time on Clyde FM to chat about Rangers versus Benfica. It's coming off of Thursday. And yeah, former Rangers and Vancouver Whitecaps legend Kenny Miller was on the panel. me and Barney joined the Rangers rant on the Rangers Journal podcast. But the funny thing is, Barney, obviously there was a few days between doing those two things. And in between that, there was a certain game which kind of changed completely what we said, you know, in previewing the Rangers game. We'll perhaps come on to that in a second. But yeah, you know, good to always do other podcasts and guests and stuff. So yeah, keep an eye out for those. I think both of those will be on our Twitter. But yeah, you all right other than that?
I did have a moment today. It was quite a nostalgic moment. I was just thinking a lot about Adel Taarabt and how lucky we were to be. I don't know why I was thinking about him.
So always good to hear his name on this podcast.
Well, yeah, just like, you know, how nice was it to be able to watch him play in central mid in Portugal? Just, you know, one of those players that you just, I don't know, so legendary for so many different people for so many different reasons. And then, yeah, we got to talk about him seriously playing centre midfield, which is just central defensive midfield sometimes, which is quite nice.
Yeah,
do you have any players that just flood back and just give you those moments? Because the Portuguese team has always had some interesting players, hasn't it? But,
well, I've got a few of them on football shirts, you know, Rafael Martins, although still playing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Adel Taarabt, I've also got him on a shirt. Ryan Gould, of course. Luther Singh, I was thinking about the other day. Great little
player.
There
you go, What's that thing? Guys can just sit around and name old footballers.
Oh, man, maybe that should be the bonus Long Ball Football podcast, just talking about ex-Portuguese pros. although this is quite literally the worst week to start doing that because we've got probably the biggest game of the season to talk about, and it's going to take up a lot of time, which we will do in due course. But before we get onto that, of course, before we start, just a quick word to say thank you very much for listening, and to let you know that if you want to support the podcast, there's a few ways that you can do that. You can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, you can leave us star rating on Spotify. Just sharing the word about the podcast is also really helpful. So giving it a share on Twitter or sending it to your friends that you reckon might enjoy it, that's a really good way to help the pod. And of course, if you want to go one step further, you can become a Long Ball Football Socio on Patreon for just £1 a month, where you get such benefits as weekly bonus preview podcasts, a weekly predictions league, which is a lot of fun, and monthly watch-alongs with other Patreons. I believe, Barney, this month it's going to be next Monday. Is it GD Shavs versus Gil Vicente? We do genuinely enjoy those kind of smaller games on a Monday. It gives us a chance to watch teams we wouldn't normally watch, and with the added bonus that if it's a bit of a boring game, then we can just have a bit of a chat. So yeah, definitely have a look at our Patreon if that interests you. A link to that is in the description of this podcast. But look, it's time to get stuck in, because unless you were living under a rock, you would have seen that there was a game on Sunday between Porto and Benfica. And a pretty incredible game at that. Before the game, we were, of course, all speculating about what would happen. Benfica were in much better form going into the game, albeit after a disappointing Taça Portugal defeat to Sporting. Porto had been in poor form in the league, but perhaps were buoyed by a recent win against Arsenal in the Champions League, which would have given them belief that they could beat a big team in a big game. And of course, Barney, as I always say, with Sergio Conceição at the helm, you can never write off Porto in a Clásico, no matter what the current state of the club is. I think, though, what nobody was expecting was the game that we got, in which Porto played by far their best game of the season. They were 2-0 up at halftime, and an astounding second half, which saw them score three more second half goals with no response from Benfica, earned them an incredible 5-0 win against their fiercest rivals. For Benfica, it was a capitulation at the worst possible time, a humiliating result for the fans and the club, and a result that saw Sporting overtake them in the league with a game in hand. And although it might not mean an awful lot to Porto in terms of the league position, it meant an awful lot to the fans, to the players, to the manager. And as I said on Twitter, Barney, for me, this is one of the most remarkable results we've had in Portuguese football for quite a few years.
Yeah, it does feel like that in terms of the way these two teams have played this season and the expectations of both of them as the season progressed. Particularly Porto, I think our expectations of what they were going to achieve this year has, well, gone right down until that Arsenal performance. And the Arsenal performance, you know, comparing it to this game, is interesting, isn't it? Because that was obviously in Europe and against certainly a much better team. And we saw that in the way that Porto played, and which was, I guess you could say, a typical Porto performance in the Champions League, which was really well organised, great defensive work, great from every single one of those players. And taking their limited chances when they got it going forward. In this game, though, against Benfica, it was different, though. It was the way Conceição had his team play and how they exploited Benfica's weaknesses was just incredible to watch. And it just felt out of the blue. And we're obviously going to talk a lot about this game. And when I was making my notes for this game, I sort of came to a realisation of why I think this has happened. But I think the thing for one of the standout players in this game was Nico Gonzalez in midfield. And he represents a lot of things for Porto this season. I think, well, in this game particularly, it was the way that they were able to play out the back. They really stretched Benfica. You know, they invited them on. You know, we've seen Benfica be balanced and cautious this season. I've said that a lot. And the way that Porto just sucked them forward and created the space for the midfielders, the amount of times Pepe got the ball from Varela or Gonzalez with acres of space to turn and attack, you know, they really stretched the field. I mean, Varela as well, alongside Nico Gonzalez, you know, they're just so technically comfortable. You know, they can take the ball on, you can invite the pressure on, they can take the ball on in difficult areas, find space, find a pass so quickly. I thought that was really vital for the way Porto played. And that just, you know, that just meant they could get forward quickly and stretch the attack, Benfica's defence. Looking specifically at Conceição, but because, you know, we've been very critical of him this season. It's moments like this where, like, and I think this is the reason I'm talking about this is because the amount of Poritz Amorim has got this season and the clubs he's been rumoured to move to, you know, like the likes of Liverpool and, you know, top clubs in Europe. Conceição has been the best manager in Portugal for several years. I think Amorim's, I'll stick my neck on myself, I think Amorim's better at the moment. But, you know, if, this is just a really good reminder of how good Conceição is. And with the Arsenal performance as well in the back of my mind, he is so good. He is so... Because people have said, you know, there's been points this season where people said this is the worst Porto squad he's had to work with, right? Mm-hmm. And he's just, you know, beaten Arsenal in the Champions League. He's brought out this incredible performance against top of the table Benfica. I was just so impressed with Conceição. And I think, you know, we shouldn't forget how good he is. And this result was down to him because, like I said, people have described the squad as one of the weakest ones he's had to work with. And he got them up for it. And he played a great game tactically. It was just, yeah, I was so impressed.
No, absolutely. And it's funny because I think it was, I just saw on Twitter, Tom Kunda of Portugal on it just tweeted out exactly the same thing, you know, that we see Ruben Amorim so regularly linked with top jobs, but we don't see Conceição linked with the same jobs. And why is that? Is it perhaps because he's a slightly less fashionable prospect because, you know, his age, he's not exactly a young manager. Maybe it's because of his temperament, because he's so fiery on the touchline, perhaps a bit of a controversial figure. But listen, there were two ways that this game was won. One, because Sergio Conceição outmanaged Roger Schmidt by far. And two, because of the differing mentalities between the teams. You know, one team went in with the right mentality and the other team crumbled psychologically, in my opinion. And I think when I look at the way Roger Schmidt set out his team in this game, I think the problem started before the match even kicked off with that lineup. And I really do wonder, why does Roger Schmidt do this so much, with, in my opinion, overthinking the lineup and playing players out of position? Because in the starting 11, right, he had a defensive midfielder playing right back, a centre back playing left back, an attacking midfielder playing as a deep midfielder, a central midfielder playing on the left wing, all while he has a lot of good players on the bench for whom those are their natural positions. I'm thinking particularly of Florentino in midfield and some of the natural wingers that they have. You know, João Mário playing at central midfield was an absolute disaster. He played one of the worst individual performances that I've watched in a Portuguese league in a long time. He was completely useless defensively. He got ripped apart when he was trying to cover the left-hand side by Chico Conceição. He never tracked back properly. He defended with about 50% commitment, and he was a complete passenger. Florentino Luiz, like I said, on the bench the whole time for whom, and that's his natural position. He would do that much better than João Mário. I think Morata had the same problem. He was terrorised by Conceição all game. And again, all the while, Carreras is on the bench, although he did come on, who, I know he's unproven, and I'm not saying he's an amazing defender, but at least he's got a bit more pace and a bit more agility that is going to kind of make him be able to keep up with Conceição's runs a bit better. I don't think that's particularly difficult thing to predict. You know, I don't know why he chose Tengstead up front when he has both Arthur Cabral and Marcus Leonardo on the bench for me, who are both better than Tengstead. Cabral especially, who's more experienced than either of those other two, or big games, which is vital. I think it was just so many choices made by Roger Schmidt that I think he got wrong. Of course, the players themselves were very poor. Like I said, that psychological side of the game for me was the most telling. But the setup from the beginning was so wrong. And I don't just think, you know, I don't think this is just with the benefit of hindsight, Barney. I think anyone could have told you, at the very least, that going into the biggest derby game you have, one of the most important games of the season, with inexperienced players playing out of position, is probably not a good idea.
Yeah, for me, I saw a tweet which perfectly summed up this situation that Roger Smith has gone to him. It's from Rafael Pacheco, a great follow on Twitter. He said, Roger Schmidt stopped being faithful to his ideas. He's lost game pressing. He lost the offensive dynamics of the lateral corridor. He lost the consistency of an initial 11. And that, for me, is the most important bit, that last bit there, because last year's Benfica winning team was so consistent in terms of the players and the positions. You know, you knew what team was going to come out 99% of the time. There were those only rotations for injuries. And although Benfica have had their injuries this season, we've also seen Roger Schmidt make a lot of changes to his 11 and to the positions that some of those players are playing. You mentioned João Mário there. He's gone from playing left mid to 10 to 6 in the last three games.
You know, and how many of those positions has he played well?
Exactly. You know, that's a great point. And Morata as well. The left-back position is ridiculous, right? Because they've signed 3 left-backs this season. I just couldn't get that at all. Morata was so poor against Conceição. Conceição had so much joy. And by the way, Chico Conceição, that was probably his best game. You know, I think a few weeks ago I mentioned he needed to start delivering in terms of goals and assists to sort of boost that level. And in this game, he did it because almost all of his balls he was putting in was so dangerous. And I think he's got it spot on there where he said he's just overthinking things. The amount of changes is just not feasible, and the fact that he, in this game at halftime, you know, he addressed it, those two players you mentioned who were playing badly, Morata and João Mário. Those are, as you said, those were decisions that could have been made at the beginning of the game, that shouldn't have been made at the beginning of the game. You know, Florentino has been far too underused by Schmidt this season.
I agree.
You know, he's certainly had his moments in the Champions League. I can't remember if it was this season or last season, but at one point he was the best defensive performer in the whole of Europe, in the Champions League, in terms of interceptions and tackles. His numbers were sky high. You know, he's a real, you know, in this sort of game, he would be one of those key players. Tengstead up front as well was just, I don't know, he really has divvied about who he's going to lead his line. And as you said, Marcus Leonardo's come in and his goals per minute ratio is ridiculous, and for him not to get a look in.
If you're going to go, if you're going to go with an inexperienced striker, why pick the one who hasn't scored all season over the one who's scored loads of goals since he signed off the bench? You know, I would have personally gone with Cabral, but you know, even of the two more experienced strikers, that just seems like a strange choice. Sorry, I'm getting carried on.
It is really strange. It's bizarre, and I think that's why Benfica fans are getting so frustrated and perhaps reacting so as strong as they are to this result, which, you know, on paper, looking at the league and looking at their, you know, it might seem as an overreaction, but it has felt like that for a long time now, that Roger Schmidt is just getting these things wrong. And it's just quite obvious, like, why some of his decisions are, how some of his decisions are affecting the team. Albert, can I just quickly go back to Conchisao, though, sort of as a parallel to this discussion about Roger Schmidt, because we were praising him in the first part of the discussion there, but I think one thing we do need to bear in mind is how I feel like some of the changes to this Porto team have been forced rather than his decision. You look at the likes of Wendell playing at left back, you know, for, I think if Zaidi was fit, he'd probably been playing more recently, but then, you know, he's come away with Wendell performing so well in these last few games, last few weeks.
And all that's the Brazil national team.
Exactly, you know, and I'm not sure that was necessarily down to Conchisao. The other one I would say as well is Taremi. I think whether that's more behind closed doors, but the fact that he's been phased out of the team and we're going with the Pepe at number 10, how much of that down to Conchisao? I don't know. But I think one thing that has come true for Conchisao and is Otavio at centre back, you know, a left footed centre back who I think Conchisao has wanted for so long, and we know that because of the signing of Karma a couple of years ago, and the fact that didn't play out, maybe that is Conchisao's fault, maybe it's not, but regardless, when Porto are playing with a left footed centre back in this team, as when Mancano made a few appearances in the beginning of the season, they've looked so much better. And as I said at the beginning, talking about Nico Gonzalez and Vera, the way they were playing out from the back and that Catavio's comfortableness on the ball, his distribution. You know, we even saw that in the Arsenal game, how key that was when sort of getting played long up to Galeno and finding him. You know, perhaps what I'm trying to say, Albert, is in a way, we've come to perhaps Conchisao's ideal Porto for this season with those players coming in, whether that's his decision or force. It just looks so good in this moment. And yeah, to sort of round it off and bring back Schmidt into discussion, it's chalk and cheese, isn't it, in this game. And I think we've seen time and time again Conchisao come under pressure and then reply. Right, this is the first time we've seen Schmidt come under pressure. And it's been a sustained amount of time, this pressure from Schmidt, and we haven't yet seen any reaction from him.
I mean, I think that's a great point. And again, do you know what? I'm acutely aware of the fact that a lot of this stuff we haven't spoken about at the time. You know, I speak for myself. I haven't criticised Benfica that much this season. In fact, I've been pretty positive about Benfica, but that's kind of focusing on the league and the fact that they're still in the title race. But I think that what you've just said there is a really interesting point about Roger Schmidt and his performance in big games against big teams. The listeners will have to forgive me. I don't quite have things to hand, but you know, we made a lot of the fact that these three games, this period of three games, Sporting in the Cup, Porto in the league, Rangers in the Europa League, three big games in a row. These games don't come around very often, big games like this, and suddenly to have three in a row is a big test. Well, they failed the first test against Sporting, and I think Roger Schmidt made mistakes in that game. They've profoundly failed this test against Porto, and I think you know, it's going to be a real interesting test again on Thursday against Rangers to see how they respond. But does this go back further, Barney? Because I know they beat Porto in the first leg of this game in the league back in October, wherever it was, but that was only 1-0, and Porto had a player sent off after about 20 minutes. And they obviously had a really dreadful Champions League campaign where they got 4 points, you know. So I think that is a really interesting point that I think it is fair to be levelled at Roger Schmidt.
I just want to come out because I was thinking the same thing as you, and I saw a statistic that in terms of games against the big four between themselves in the league this season, Benfica have come away with the most points. But I think the key thing to this discussion here is Benfica in Europe and how poorly that came about. Because let's not beat around the bush. I think Benfica's ambitions this season with the signing of Di Maria was to go far in the Champions League, right? And Schmidt just never put out a team or a performance that looks worthy of that in the Champions League. It was a disaster. They struggled against Toulouse to get through to this round of the Europa League. This Porto game was an absolute capitulation. You know, you said it was one of the most remarkable results in Portuguese football.
In recent years.
And I think it is. And I think, you know, there's been an underlying flatness to Benfica this season. I think I'm just coming around to the thinking that, you know, it's more to do with the players' ability than it is to do with Roger Schmidt's tactical ability for the reason they're so high up the table. And I think it's all sort of starting to come to pass now. It's all coming together when we're starting to really see the cracks in Roger Schmidt's managerial ability. I just think there's been, you know, as I mentioned before, that Rafael Pacheco tweet about he's lost his consistency. He's lost. It feels like he's lost a lot this season compared to last season. And in the big games, in the Champions League particularly, and now this game as well, which was very key that, you know, we get to the crunch time of the season. It was just bad. It was really poor. And it's been a bad week for them. And let's hope it doesn't get worse.
Absolutely. Well, we spent a lot of time talking about managers there. I think rightly so, but I think let's bring it back to players just before we end discussion of this game. I mean, there is so much to cover. And I said at the beginning that this was Porto's best performance of the season. And I think it was the same for a number of the players on the pitch. Most notably for me, Barney, a player that you quite rightly flagged up earlier, Francisco Conceição, who played, I mean, arguably, I'd be interested to hear from Porto fans here, arguably the best game of his entire career so far, certainly in a Porto shirt. And I can't imagine that he's played better than that for Ajax. Galeno was outstanding. You know, we said in our Portugal preview article that he can be inconsistent, but he does often step up in big games, as he did so here. Like you, I thought Nico Gonzalez was excellent. In fact, for me, he was my man of the match in that midfield, because I thought he was just majestic in a way that perhaps goes under the radar. He was very underrated stuff, but he was fundamental to the way that Porto played, and his ability to receive the ball in midfield and set his team on the attack was vital for the way they played. But again, is it really a coincidence that all these players suddenly have an amazing game all at the same time? I think obviously a huge amount of credit goes to the players who responded to the occasion very well. But again, just to mention Conceição, I think we do have to give him credit for the psychological side of the game. So often the stereotype of Conceição is that he's hot-headed. And do you know what my prediction going into this game was, Barney? I found it hard to predict, but I thought for sure what we were going to do was see Conceição send his team out to fight, and we were going to get one of the more feistiest derbies because just of the nature of the form that Porto were in, and he was going to build it up as this battle, as the underdog story. When in fact, it was the complete opposite. And he sent that team out to play their football and to show Benfica, you know, exactly what they can do. And the players executed it down to a T.
Can I just say, it was from a negative side in terms of players' performances, I thought it was piss poor from Osimhen to get sent off. Just so,
oh, absolutely.
It was just like, it was, you know, and he knew not that he meant it, but like he just didn't care. You know, the reaction from, you know, he just got straight up and walked off. Like, it was a really shit challenge. It was always going to be a yellow. That was really disappointing for me. It reminded me of Pep against Sporting back around Christmas time, where he was with Mateus Reese and he was sort of grappling, and it was that felt like a silly thing to do as well. But it just, you know, it's not what your team wants. And you know, Otamendi's been a good player for Benfica. Just one of those, I don't know. You always look for answers, don't you, when stuff happens. I was just thinking about Thomas Araújo on the bench, but yeah.
I think it's a really, really important point. It wasn't just him as well, was it? It was other senior players, like I mentioned. João Mario was pretty much checked out of the game. Rafa didn't have a great game. The two Benfica players you could probably walk off the pitch with their heads held high. The goalkeeper, who, listen, maybe could have done better for one or two of the goals, but I don't think was at fault for most of them. And a 19-year-old João Neves. And, look, I was debating whether to bring this up on the podcast because we don't know all the facts about this situation, but we do know that João Neves, a 19-year-old kid, lost his mother recently. Right, he hasn't missed a game for Benfica, and he was sent out after this game to do the media duties, which he did. Right, Otamendi didn't go out to do the duties. Maybe he wasn't allowed to because he was suspended. Rafa didn't. Di Maria didn't. João Mário didn't. You know, I think that was really telling, and I think for me, that is the most worrying side of this whole situation for Benfica, is the fact that I said it before. I think it is a psychological defeat more than anything, and there were real weak players out there on the field psychologically, players who you would expect better from, and I think that was one of the most worrying things. Benfica fans can disagree or agree with that if they want. Look, the last thing that we should consider about this game, Barney, is of course, where does it leave both of these teams? Because whilst it is obviously, like I said, a huge boost for Porto and their season and their fans, they're still 6 points off second place. They're 7 points off first, obviously first place with a game in hand. But with 10 games to go, crazier things can happen. And they could get back into this title race if they can build momentum off of this performance. For Benfica, obviously, it feels like a huge blow, and it is. But even if Sporting win their game in hand, Benfica is still only 4 points behind. And that's with Sporting still to play both Benfica and Porto. So whilst it does feel like the end of the world at the moment, there's still enough time that things could change for this result to not necessarily be a deciding factor for their season. That said, like I said, it could be so psychologically damaging that it completely derails their season and takes them out of the title race. The rest of the season, including Champions League football, is going to be a real test for Benfica, and it now falls to how do each of these teams respond to this result, and where does their season go from here?
Well, March is a big month for Benfica. They've got the Rangers games. They've got Estoril, Casapia and Shabs. And I mean, it's big because they need to be winning every single one of their games. Because they're running, you know, as you mentioned, Sporting, Moreirense, Ferenc, Braga, Famalicão, Arouca and Rio Ave. You know, they've all been tough games for some of the big teams this season. So that's a tough run. I mean, I've seen some chat on Porto about, you know, they're back in the title race. I think the Champions League football is the key one, isn't it? That second place, and whether Benfica will crumble under the pressure and Porto can continue this momentum. Because, you know, we've talked about the Arsenal game, we've talked about this game, and we shouldn't forget they had that drab draw against Gil Vicente, you know, the last time out in the league. So they are also capable of that, it would seem. I don't know. I also think a lot of players would have got a lot of confidence in this game, and perhaps the player we've both spoken about now, Chico Costa, was that one. And, you know, he could prove to be a vital player for them in the running. But yeah, just still a bit in awe of that game and how that, because there's no way I would have ever seen that coming, that result.
Absolutely. And it's all about where does each team go from here. All right. Well, there are other games of football for us to talk about, which we will do so. Of course, before we do, we always love to hear you guys' thoughts. And I know that a lot of people will have their own opinions and things they want to get off their chest. So if you do want to get in contact with us, you can find us on Twitter at Longball Football. Send us a message, tweet us. And yeah, we're always interested to hear your opinions, especially about big games like this. But without further ado, let's move on and talk about another game. Because of course, Barney, the team playing closest attention to that result was Sporting, who got exactly what they wanted with a Benfica loss. And after beating Ferenc 3-2 at home, perhaps not as straightforward as it could have been, put them back at the top of the table with a game in hand. Now, Ferenc scored two goals in the game to make things a bit tighter than what Sporting would have liked. But in general, it was a very good performance and a vital 3 points, which puts the title race back into the hands of Ruben Amorim's team.
Yeah, I think my key takeaway from this for Sporting in this game was the squad rotation, right? They was able to bring in some other players, give some players a rest. You look at that back line, it was Sentius, Diamande and Mateus Reis. I think that's the first time that's that they've played as a back three this season. Ricardo's guy as well, getting into the team. And perhaps most impressively, Brancaccia in midfield. I think I had such high hopes for Brighton this season, and obviously the signing of Hjulmand and the development of Morito sort of limited his chances into the midfield. But for him to come in this game and play so well, obviously he got his goal. But I was also impressed with his defensive work rate, right? Because that's one of the things I think was perhaps always going to be his issue in terms of getting into this Amiens midfield. You know, you've got to be able to do everything. You've got to get up and down. You've got to work hard. Hjulmand and Morito are the prime examples of that. You know, show me someone who's box to box. You look at both of those. Brugganza really impressed me in this game by showing that he can do that, because I've always thought Brugganza is perhaps a, if I was to describe as an eight, you know, but a bit more technical, a bit more forward thinking. But this was a really good performance from him. And same thing as Guy, he did well. I thought that the back line did all right. Obviously, Franco Israel was in goal as well for the Indian Adnan, which I find very interesting, because I did you remember what I said? Was it last week? It was that if he Adnan plays two more games, he gets an automatic contract extension. But I think he's out to at least April now, so that'll be interesting whether he can get back in
Very
the
fishy, something very
team.
fishy going on there.
Yeah, but no, look, it was a good win. I think Friends' goals were brilliant, but it was a good thing for Sporting, and the perfect thing to do before that derby.
Yeah, I think they can be happy with the game, and you know, some lovely goals. I think particularly Vitiokra's goal was, you know, the Friends defender will be disappointed to lose his man, but it's a really, really nice little finish. I just feel sorry for Ferenc Barney, because they put on a really good performance. I mean, to be fair, they were probably a little bit fortunate. You know, the first goal is just one of the goals of the season, completely out of nowhere. From, is it Algerian winger Bloumi? He scored. You know, if you've not seen this goal, go check it out. He puts one in the top corner from outside the box. It's fantastic. That gives them a bit of hope. Then they get the equaliser from the corner, and again, maybe that's a little bit kind of fortunate, because it's a good ball into the box and a great header from Zé Luís. You know, that man who used to play for Porto and now plays for Ferenc. Great to see him on the score sheet. And you know, Sporting could have found themselves in that position and choked a little bit, but they stayed calm. They scored very soon after the equaliser to go 3-2 ahead. And I think that really kind of put any hopes of a Ferenc upset on ice. And in the end, it was a very, very professional game. And, you know, look, Sporting, they've won a lot of games this season. They've played a lot of good football. The games are not always going to be easy. Not everything is always going to go as they want it to. But the point is that even in games with a little bit of a level of difficulty, they're still getting the 3 points when it's needed.
Oh, I think that's really interesting that when hearing you say, you know, they stayed calm. You know, as I mentioned, this is a very heavy rotated side. You know, no quietness in that 11, and they made their changes. But at that point, they were 3-2 up, as you said. And I think that's the difference we're seeing with this Amarin Sporting this season. They seem that bit better in terms of their game management, the belief that they're going to win. It just feels a bit more polished, and that's with every player in that squad. So they did well for that. Just to go back to Bloomy, Albert, because he's a player I've talked about a few times with friends. It was a hell of a goal. Such a good strike. I really like him. I think he's a really good winger. I think if you look at his highlights reel, it will all be about his runs, and his, you know, that goal will certainly be in it. But he also works very hard defensively. You know, Friends have got the lowest amount of possession this season in the league. You know, they're rock bottom, so there's a lot of defending to do. There's a lot of work to do in that team, and he does that. I mean, looking a bit further into Friends' stats, because they are such an interesting team. They've got the lowest possession in the league, but they've got the seventh highest XG, and they also have the fourth highest shots on target percentage. So they're incredibly efficient. You know, they're like a they are. They do their jobs well, and Zé Luís, as you mentioned, that, you know, I had forgotten he was there, but they've got some good quality in the attacking line, and the rest work really hard. I think defensively, there's no standout players, is there? I think Gonçalo Silva had a pretty decent game up against Jóqueres, but you know, otherwise, they're just yeah, it's a real team effort, and they do it well. And that, as I said, I think efficiency is the best way to describe Friends this season. You know, they've given every big team a good get. They've scored against every time they play against one of the big four. and they're good for their points as well. So they should be safe this season.
Yeah, there's a few teams that we're going to come on to that I think would kill for the kind of efficiency in front of goal that Ferenc have got this season. Let's talk about another game, Barney. It was Braga who got a 3-0 win at home against Estrela da Amadora. A much-needed win for Braga, who would have obviously been disappointed that Porto won, because 3 points against Estrela would have put them level with Porto had they lost against Benfica. It was only a couple of weeks ago, Barney, after Braga lost 5-0 to Sporting and then lost the first leg of that Europa League tie against Carabao, that we were saying it would be an important week for them to bounce back from that result. They crashed out of Europe, unfortunately, but in the league, they did respond with a 4-0 win over Boavista, and of course this weekend following it up with this 3-0 win over Estrela. Now, interested in your thoughts on the game, because on the paper, obviously two good results, but I do personally think that the scoreline flattered them a bit in this game. It wasn't quite as comfortable as what perhaps the scoreline suggests, especially in the first hour of the game or so when it was still 0-0, and Braga, I think, really struggled to create a lot of good chances. But penalty from Simon Banza broke the deadlock. And that goal, it really felt like it kind of took a bit of a weight off Braga's shoulders. You know, they got two more goals after that. Obviously, quite a lot of sloppy defending from Estrela, if we're being honest. But at the end of the day, a win's a win, and Braga did what they needed to do. But for me, it does definitely feel, Barney, that Braga are still playing with a certain amount of weight on their shoulders. Perhaps still a hangover of crashing out of Europe and that big defeat to Sporting, but it's not all plain sailing at the moment.
No, they seem to be going through a bit of a evolution as a team. You know, we were becoming quite accustomed to Arthur George's 11. You know, Jallo and Bruma on the wings, Ricardo Horta behind Banza, Maserati and Carvalho or Zalazar. But you know, with the departure of Maserati and a few other factors, you know, Jallo's now been announced as a departing as well. At the end of the season, he'll be going to Athletic in Spain. Bruma's form has fluctuated. They just seem like they're in a different space. I'm not so sure on this Albert Ruiz being in the team alongside Banza. I'm not sure if you lose a little something in the creativity in that sense, because obviously you're playing without a 10. Same with midfield. Gian Moutinho, who's also just signed a contract extension as well at Braga, just it's a different prospect when you're playing with him in that midfield. You know, there's a bit more responsibility for the other player, be that Carvalho or Zalazar. So they're just, as I said, they seem to be evolving. Arthur Jordan seems to be trying to change his team. I guess the real positive change has been the inclusion of Roger into the starting 11, who has really repaid that decision and is looking so good. It's just such an exciting talent. And I see people saying that, you know, he's the ready replacement for Jallo, but I mean, if he keeps playing like this, someone's surely going to be sniffing around him, because he's been fantastic and he's really taken his opportunity. He's looking great.
Yeah, I mean, he's arguably Braga's best winger at the moment. And am I really going to include Ricardo Horta in that? But, you know, he's not been amazing on current form. I think, you know, like you say, Roger, man of the match in this game. It's just incredible, Barney, that he's still only 18 years old. Like, we've been talking about Roger for, is it 3 seasons now? You know, and he's not always started games, but he's been playing a full 90 minutes the last couple. We played a full 90 in this game, scored a very good goal that he did deserve. But like I say, such a talented kid. And the thing that he brings is just that it's a fresh energy, and it's that youthful spark that Braga need at the moment, because they have had their issues. And it definitely helps that they have this new fearless type of player in the side to help, as you say, with Arthur George trying to evolve the team a little bit, which is what they need.
I think they need to be careful, Braga. I think they need to really focus on what they're trying to do this season. I think, you know, they still need to believe that they can keep close to Porto and maybe even challenge them. They really need to have a focus, and that's one thing that could become an issue now. You know, where is that focus? Where is their target for the season? Because, you know, crashing out of Europe and then not being able to improve on last season, you just can't get too negative about it. They really need to, try and push on and have a strong finish to this season and get something from it. I think we could be saying the same thing about Australia as well. I think they've had an okay start to the season, but they are starting to dip and slip down the table and get really close to that danger zone. We haven't really seen any positives, which feels like a little while now. The attack, I felt like they had something there. And then Ronald went to, was it Swansea? That sort of surprise move. But they've lost something in his departure, I would say. Jabba has offered a little bit, but otherwise, they don't seem to have much quality. So yeah, I think they're, well, I guess you could say both teams are in a similar situation. They really need to focus on what they want to achieve for the rest of the season to play, and try and make steps to improve. I think you made it was spot on to say that, despite it being 3-0, it does feel underwhelming from Braga. I think if we're looking at one success from Arda Turan this season, it's been finding Simon Banza's consistency, because that's something we discussed for several seasons now, but whether he's a player who can do that. And I haven't really seen much from Arda Turan this season in terms of what he's brought to this team. But Simon Banza's consistency and his confidence and his ability has probably been the bright spot from Braga's season. And as you said, it was a key point in the game. Got that goal, eased the pressure a little bit, and then they were able to get those next two goals. So yeah, I think I just want, yeah, it's interesting to speculate where Banza might be next season, but he's been so consistency is the key, isn't it? And that was one of his issues, and that seems to have been ironed out this season.
And the only problem now is that if I hope it's not too harsh to say, but I think he's probably carrying Braga a little bit at the moment, and we've seen that, for example, when he went to African Cup of Nations, that when he's not there, they really can struggle to score goals and create chances. All right, let's try and get through a couple more games before we go, and I think it's worth talking about Estoril versus Vitória. Alvaro Pacheco returning to face the club where he was briefly manager earlier this season, now managed by his good friend Vasco Sierra. Both teams were without a league win since the 4th of February, and both teams would have dearly loved to get a win in this game, but it was Vitória who stormed into a 3-0 lead at half-time and held on to win the game 3-1. Estoril were absolutely woeful at the back in the first half. They did improve in the second half, and I think they were probably unlucky not to score at least one more goal in that second period, but they gave themselves such a mountain to climb to get anything out of the game, and that they had to settle for a very, very disappointing loss.
Yeah, Vitória really needed this result after a couple of poor results. Albert, it's man of the match. It's the first goal scorer. It's João Mendes, the I'd say the forgotten man of Vitória since Pacheco's come in charge. How many goals and how many results did he bring in the first half of the season? And when Pacheco came into the job, he's sort of been eased out the team. Nuno Santos has sort of been preferred to that sort of left wing position. But then João Mendes got the start in this game, repaid the faith with an early goal and got things going. I think I think that's probably been one of Pacheco's weaknesses, actually, not to utilise him, because we were all blown away by his contribution to Vitória this first half of the season, arriving from Shabs and just getting key goals and wonder goals, just out of the blue. So to see him back in the team ahead of Nuno Santos, I think was a good decision and certainly paid off. Nelson Oliveira's get goals is good, because I think that's a worry for me. I mean, the big news is for them is the loss of Andre Silva moving to Brazil. Is it Vasco da Gama?
He's off to São Paulo, and Clayton from Casapia has been rumoured with Vasco da Gama.
So that's a huge loss. I saw a graphic the other day of. It was a chart of how teams in Portugal play. The big teams are actually quite all around the same area, which was slow and intricate. And the team of firms opposite was Vitória in terms of being direct and fast. Now, when you think of Andre Silva in that striking position, that makes sense, doesn't it? Someone with pace and someone who likes to run. When you think of Nelson Oliveira and Adrian Butzka, who came on for him in this game, that's not that. you know, so what's going to happen for the rest of the season will be interesting. I think obviously that those players can do other things in terms of bringing those attacking players like Jota Silva and João Mendes or Nuno Santos, whoever it is, into play. But I feel like that's a huge change to this team, you know, that profile of striker leading the line. So, yeah, an interesting one, but a good, vital win for Vitória. So, in terms of keeping momentum of their season.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what I feel? To be honest, mate, I feel a little bit sorry for Estoril, even though I do think they were poor. I mean, I know some people dislike expected goals as a statistic, but Vitória were 3-0 up in the first half and they had an expected goals of like less than 0.5. So, you know, they conceded three goals. So it was, you know, if you go back and watch the highlights of the game, first three goals is like shots outside the box that get deflected, just like real, real half chances. And yet, somehow they find themselves 3-0 down, especially conceding the third goal in like the 46th minute or something. So disappointed because, like I said, they could have scored two goals in the second half. In fact, the second half XG for Estoril was over two expected goals. So they really created loads of chances in the second half. And I think the second half is much more like what they need to be playing. The problem for Estoril is very simple. They cannot defend for love nor money, and they're way too easy to beat. They can see goals for fun, and you are not going to get points in any league in the world when you're defending the way Estoril defend. And it's a real shame because I'm a big Vasco Sierra fan. We saw flashes in the second half of what this team can do with, you know, creating chance after chance, good attacking football. You know, we're going to come on and talk about Arouca in just a second, but you look at the way that team plays. That's what Estoril should be doing, but for whatever reason, something's gone badly wrong, and they are leaking goals. It's as simple as that. You know, sometimes there's a complicated solution. Sometimes it's very simple. They're defending incredibly badly.
That's something they've tried to address, though, isn't it? They brought Basso in from Brazil. They brought in a Danish centre back, Frederik Winter, on loan from Augsburg, but you know he made an error in this game. You know they. I think Gilberto Tavares was playing sort of left wing back, which isn't going to go well. You don't need me to say that. Maybe they've lost something in the field with Coindre going to Sporting in terms of sort of defensive cover. But you know, it's been an issue for a long time, and nothing's been addressed.
So many problems at Estoril at the moment. They are in a little bit of danger of getting sucked back into that relegation battle that they did so well to escape from. But if anything that they can take from this game is if they can somehow tidy up the defence, then they can attack really well. And that does bring me nicely onto the last game that we're going to chat about. Another team wearing yellow who know how to attack incredibly well. Because the game with the most goals this weekend wasn't Porto beating Benfica 5-0, wasn't that 3-2 clash between Sporting and Friends, but the very first game of the weekend on Friday night, which saw Arouca smash Gidi Shabs 5-1 away from home with an attacking display which crushed Shabs' hopes of survival even further. Shavs took an early lead when Rafael Guzzo finished really well, actually, on the volley from outside the box. But they let that lead slip and allowed Arouca to lead 2-1 at half-time. And a nightmare opening 7 minutes of the second half saw Arouca score three goals in 7 minutes. And half the GD Shavs fans decided they'd seen enough and went home for an early cup of tea. They did improve as the second half went on, but the damage was already done. And, you know, look, this is not just a damaging result in terms of not getting any points, but look, psychologically, again, you sense that this will have a big impact on a team already really, really low on confidence.
Yeah, I mean, Shab's looking in real trouble. I think it will only be a matter of time before Moreno's out the door there. We're about to come on and praise Arouca because they deserve their praise, but Moreno hasn't really shown anything in terms of improving Shabs in terms of his stability, adding defensive stability. You know, that was always an issue all season, and there's been no improvement there. Obviously, Guzzo, one of the additions they made in January has helped them, and this was a good goal, but defensively, they were all over the place, but that is due to a very, very good Arouca side under a very good manager. who just seem to be. It's sometimes it almost looks like their attacks are choreographed. Do you know what I mean? Like there was that. What was that game where they scored almost directly from kickoff? That just felt like a move that was planned to a T. Like every player knew exactly what they were doing, and that, I mean, they just looked so well coached. I love seeing Moulay Sylla playing a more advanced role in this game. You know, sort of back to his best. Jason, and do you know what Jason is? Because I feel with Christo Gonzalez coming through in Nazi, he comes with a bit of pedigree, he's been playing Serie A, he's got a bit of quality. Jason came from, was it the Spanish second tier? Just a bit of a journeyman in Spain, never really made it a big club, playing for sort of struggling teams. But he's something's clicked with him at Arouca, and he's really, really performing well. And finally, Majica. Do you know what I love? I love going on Twitter and finding a long thread, which is like a scout report or something, on one of the players from the lower teams in Portugal. I saw one on Mujica, and it was spot on because it just described him as like an old school striker that you don't see anymore. Doesn't really get involved in the play, plays off the last man, takes as few touches as possible before getting the shot away. Just that is his game. You know, he's not going to work defensively. He's not going to bring players into play. He's just that man who just does, you know, the basics, and he does it so well. His finishing is ridiculous. He's a really interesting striker. And if anything, that's probably a negative that he's so one-dimensional, because I do wonder where that next move is for him, because he is quite, like I said, just that number nine, if you will. Mm-hmm. But hey, look, I just thought, yeah, Arouca are absolutely brilliant. They've really found their groove again. And there seems that, you know, there's nothing to stop them getting back to the Europa Conference League places.
Absolutely, they are in fantastic form. All right, I think we will leave it there for this week's podcast. Obviously, an awful lot to get through. Just a reminder once again that if you did enjoy the show, please do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or a star rating on Spotify. Share the podcast with any friends that you reckon might enjoy it. And if you've been enjoying the show for a little while and you want to get involved a little bit more, check out our Patreon, where you can become a Long Ball Football Socio for just £1 a month. But I think that just leaves me to say thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Yes, next week.